Well, thank you very much, Willie. I appreciate that. It's a real privilege to be here. This is my first chance to be in this part of Virginia, and I've always heard about how beautiful it is, and it certainly is. And it's a great privilege to be here. The purpose of my talk is to really set the stage for the next two speakers who are going to be talking to you about specific estrosynchronization protocols. Therefore, what I'm going to emphasize today are some fundamental principles that underlie how you get a high pregnancy rate following synchronization and AI. I'd like to begin our discussion by talking about the two most important factors that affect pregnancy rate. Pregnancy rate is actually a function of two things, estrus detection rate and conception rate. We define estrus detection rate as the number of females detected in estrus divided by the number exposed to breeding. Now, in fixed-time AI, you can think of this as the number of females that are induced to ovulate divided by the number actually treated with the protocol. Conception rate is the number of females pregnant divided by the number detected in estrus. Now, one of the questions we always get when someone's initiating a synchronization and AI program is, what pregnancy rate can I expect? I think it's really important to have appropriate expectations, particularly when you're working with someone. So let's look at a few examples. Suppose we have an estrus detection rate of 95%, which would be quite good, and a conception rate of 70%, which is also very good. The product of those gives you a pregnancy rate of 67%. Now, what would happen if estrus detection rates reduced by 20 percentage points, perhaps due to a few less females cycling at the start of the breeding season? We'll hold conception rate constant. We see we decrease our pregnancy rate to 53%. If we hold estrus detection rate constant but just reduce our conception rate by 20 percentage points, perhaps due to poor semen handling or one reason or another, our pregnancy rate's now 48%. And a 20% reduction in both estrus detection rate and conception rate reduces our pregnancy rate to 38%. The thing I just wanted to emphasize is that the good things you do in a management program with your synchronization and AI program cannot compensate for the bad things that occur or for mistakes that you make. But rather, those mistakes or bad things that occur can actually cancel out the good things that you do in your management through your synchronization and AI program. Well, let's just focus on this opportunity that you have to get about two-thirds of your cows pregnant in a single day to high superior bulls. A lot of times we focus on the genetic improvement that we can get through a synchronization program, an AI program, but we can't forget the important reproductive management reasons for using synchronization. The opportunity to get two-thirds of your cows pregnant the first day of the breeding season is really an enormous benefit. And this has been alluded to by a couple of the previous speakers. So let's just focus on the importance of having beef females conceive early in the breeding season. And these are some data I got from Rick Funston, which I think really make the case. In this study, he was looking at heifers and steers that were born the first 20 days of a calving season compared to those born the second or third 20 days of a calving season. Just look at the heifers. Those heifers born the first 20 days of a calving season had a higher weaning weight. Well, that's obvious. They were older, therefore heavier at weaning. But this advantage continued in that they had a higher pre-breeding weight, a higher pre-calving weight. More of those heifers were cycling at the start of the breeding season. And this translated into a higher pregnancy rate. So there's some very important reproductive management reasons for maximizing the number of heifers born early in your calving season and selecting those as replacement heifers. Now, on the steer side, and Larry made some reference to this as well, those steers born the first 20 days of the calving season compared to those born the second or third 20-day period had a higher weaning weight for the same reason that the heifers did. But what really surprised me was the influence that time of birth during a calving season can have on end product quality. quality. Those heifers born the first, those steers born the first 20 days of the calving season had a higher hot carcass weight, higher marbling score, a greater percent grading average choice, or higher, increased carcass value. So again, I just want to emphasize the importance from a reproductive management point of view of maximizing the number of females that conceive early in a breeding season and therefore having these early calving animals. Well, there's a few things that you can do prior to the start of your synchronization and AI program that can increase the probability of success. And one of the most important things you can do is make sure that your heifers and cows meet certain criteria for being really good candidates for a synchronization and AI program. And one of the questions you can ask yourself is, what's the pregnancy rate been in my heifers over the past few years? And I would submit that if you're looking at a pregnancy rate of 85% in the first 60 to 70 days of your breeding season, then your herd's probably a good candidate to implement a synchronization and AI program. Other questions to ask is, have your heifers received growth-promoting implants? We know that growth-promoting implants administered between birth and the first 30 days of life will impair uterine development in these heifers such that pregnancy rate during that first breeding season and subsequent breeding seasons is reduced. Have you selected an appropriate target weight? And this idea of target weight is something you're going to hear more about in this conference. But a traditional recommendation that's been made is that heifers should be 60 to 65% of their mature body weight, which also brings up the question, do you know the mature body weight of your cows? In my experience, many people underestimate how heavy their cows are. Therefore, getting a chance to weigh your cows periodically can be actually quite helpful in identifying an appropriate target weight. And lastly, what proportion of your heifers have a reproductive tract score of 4 or greater? If you're not familiar with this term, reproductive tract score is a subjective measure of the sexual maturity of your heifers. It's something that can be conducted by your veterinarian 4 to 6 weeks before the start of the breeding season. It's a measure through palpation of uterine and ovarian development. And the score goes from 1 to 5, with 1 being an infantile track, 4s and 5s considered to be cycling heifers. And we'd recommend that at least 50% of your heifers have a reproductive track score of 4 or 5, 4 to 6 weeks before the start of the breeding season. What about the cows? You can ask the same question here. What's the pregnancy rate in your cow herd been over the past few years? Again, we'd recommend a pregnancy rate of greater than 85% over the first 60 to 70 days of breeding. What's the body condition score of your cows at calving? I think condition score is something we're all familiar with. Many people use the 1 to 9 score, with 1 being emaciated, 9 being obese. Cows should be 5 or greater at calving. What's the current body condition score of your cows? In other words, have they lost weight since calving? That's another question to ask. And finally, how many days postpartum will your cows be when estrus synchronization is initiated? We'd recommend that the average days postpartum be 40 days or greater. Now, that doesn't mean that each cow has to be 40 days postpartum, but when you look at the average, it should be 40 days or greater. We also don't recommend putting a seeder in a cow that's less than 20 days postpartum. So if your heifers or cows meet these criteria, you can definitely increase the probability of success with your synchronization AI program. I also want to talk about a question I get a lot every year is, where should I purchase my semen? I'd just like to make a case for purchasing semen from one of the four major AI companies who are represented here. These are some data that Dave Patterson shared with me from trials done in the state of Missouri, where almost 6,800 cows. The average pregnancy rate to fixed time AI in that data set was about 61%, represented 31 sires. Only 3 of those sires were below 50%. In those herds that were using semen from a custom collection site, admittedly much smaller numbers, but the average pregnancy rate to fixed time AI was 49%. This represented 16 sires, but 7 of those were below 50%. So let's talk about 2 fundamental principles that underlie these protocols you're going to be hearing about. There's other principles that we could talk about, but I want to emphasize 2 really important ones. And the reason I think it's important to understand how some of these protocols work is it'll help you make a better decision about which protocol is most appropriate for your heifers or cows. And also, in the event that something doesn't go right, it helps you figure out what may have gone wrong or how to correct it. I don't have time to go into this in great detail, but I would just draw your attention to a series of web-based courses that Dave Patterson, myself, and a few others have developed. This is on the University of Missouri Animal Science website. It's free. The web address for accessing this is in the paper that I wrote for this proceeding, so it's in that CD that you have. But there's 3 different courses, and you're most welcome to access those. The first thing I wanted to address is, what about those anestrus cows or those prepubertal heifers? They're all at the start of a breeding season, you're going to have a mixture of animals that are cycling and those that aren't. How do you handle those 2 populations? I want to talk about the importance of progesterone or progestin in terms of helping you manage that situation. This slide shows basically what happens before a heifer reaches puberty or a postpartum cow has her first cycle. Progesterone is a hormone that comes from the corpus luteum that's formed after ovulation. What you see here is a prepubertal heifer or a postpartum cow is going to ovulate, but she won't show estrus here. Then you have this short-lived CL, short lifespan of a corpus luteum, that provides her with an exposure to progesterone. She then has her first estrus accompanied by ovulation, and then she has a normal cycle. So one of the things we now know is that this rise in progesterone is quite important for initiating cyclic activity. And this can be simulated through some of the aspects of the protocols you're going to be hearing about. There's about 3 ways you can do this. You can inject GnRH to induce ovulation of a follicle. You'll get a rise in progesterone like this. You can administer a CEDAR, or you can feed MGA. In each case, you're simulating that short luteal phase, and that's going to help a proportion of your anestrus cows, prepubertal heifers, to start cycling. Well, how effective is this, really? Well, let's just look at a data set from a set of cows in Missouri from 4 studies. Dave Patterson provided this to me. The proportion of cows cycling at the start of synchronization in these 2,000 cows was 57%. That meant 43% were anestrus. And this is just not uncommon at all. We see 40 to 60% of the cows at the start of the breeding season may be anestrus. They were all treated with a progestin-based protocol and inseminated at a fixed time. Well, let's look at the estrus cycling cows. 65% became pregnant to that fixed time AI. What about the anestrus cows? 64% essentially conceived to that fixed time AI. Now let's think about this for a moment. These are cows that were on estrus at the start, the initiation of the synchronization protocol. Now 64% of them are pregnant. Some of those that didn't conceive, those anestrus cows that didn't conceive, have now initiated cycles, and many may conceive 20 days later. So from a reproductive management point of view, this is actually huge in increasing the proportion of females conceiving early. The other big principle that you're going to be hearing about in these protocols is synchronization of follicular waves. Fixed time AI, in order for that to occur, 2 things have to be possible. You have to control the life of the corpus luteum. You have to be able to control follicular waves. This is a picture of a cow ovary. This is a large follicle called a dominant follicle. It's dominant in 2 ways, not only in terms of its size, but in terms of its influence over other follicles on the ovary. Many of you are familiar with a graph like this, which shows follicular waves in a cow. This is a cow with 2 waves. And follicles grow initially this way. There's a recruitment of a group of follicles that start to grow. But they don't all continue to grow. One of them is selected and the others die. That one that's selected then goes on to become dominant, like what you saw in the previous picture. Notice it's dominant in size, but also it's dominance in terms of its influence. You don't see another wave occurring until this follicle loses its dominance. That allows a new wave to occur. So how do you synchronize waves? Well, by inducing ovulation during this period of dominance, you'll cause this follicle to lose its dominance, and you can advance when that wave occurs. But it's important to remember that there are certain windows during the growth of a follicular wave when this is possible and times when it's not. During the early part of a wave, from recruitment up to the time this follicle is selected, when you inject GnRH, she's not going to respond. But you have this period of time, once selection has occurred, up to when it loses its dominance, that if you give GnRH and induce ovulation, you can advance this wave. Therefore, if you had a group of cows all at this phase of a wave, when you give GnRH, you'll move this wave forward, synchronize it, and that'll aid in fixed-time AI. You're going to be hearing about some protocols here in the next two talks in which cows are actually pre-synchronized to maximize the number of females that will have a follicle in this range when they get that first GnRH injection. Well, when you go out and you're going to breed your cows at fixed-time AI, you'll notice there's some cows showing heat and there's others that have not shown heat. How important is that? How does that affect pregnancy rate? These are some data that George Perry shared with me, which shows pregnancy rate for cows in standing estrus compared to those that are not in estrus at the time of fixed-time AI. And notice that in each one of these studies, and we could show lots of other ones, pregnancy rate for those cows in estrus at fixed-time AI was higher than for those that were not in heat. And there's some good biological reasons for that. So this brings up a question. When you're trying to decide when to inseminate for fixed-time AI, when these protocols are being developed, how do you make that decision? How do you know when's the best time to inseminate in a fixed-time AI program? In these protocol sheets, you'll see a recommendation of a certain number of hours, 66 hours or 72 hours. I mean, how important is it to stick to that? How much effort has gone into really determining that that's the appropriate time? Well, let's just talk for a moment about how you determine the time of insemination, but let's start off with just talking about the physiological basis for the AM-PM rule. This is the rule that says if you find a cow in heat in the morning, then you breed her that evening. Or if she's in heat in the evening, you wait till the next morning. Why is that? What's that based on? Well, this just shows a cow that starts standing estrus here at time zero. She's in heat for about 15 hours. This little line represents some of her behavior leading up to standing estrus, mucus, riding behavior, restlessness. This shows her going out of heat. Well, there's a surge of a hormone called luteinizing hormone, LH, that occurs when a cow first stands. This hormone initiates a series of events that 28 to 30 hours later results in that follicle ovulating. So from the time of the signal to the time of ovulation, about 28 to 30 hours. If this cow wasn't in heat and you injected this hormone, again, it'd be 28 to 30 hours before she'd ovulate. Well, the lifespan of the egg is only about 8 hours, and then it starts to age and it's dying at this point. Well, what does this have to do with the AM-PM rule? Suppose you're checking heat twice a day, and you go out one morning and you detect this cow. This is her first standing estrus right here. So you're going to breed her that evening, 12 hours later. So you put the semen in. Now, frozen thawed semen, survives roughly 24 hours. That's dependent on the bull. That's not a hard and fast number, but it is dependent on the bull. But yet, that's pretty much a reasonable number for the lifespan of sperm in the female tract. This blue bar represents, though, a period of time where these sperm have to gain the capacity to fertilize. They're alive, they're fine, other than the fact that they need some exposure to the female tract to be able to fertilize the egg. But notice there's an overlap between the fertile lifespan of the sperm and the egg, so we're fine. Suppose, though, when you came out to check heat, that cow had been in heat for about 6 hours. You're going to wait 12 hours, AI. Still, good overlap of the lifespan of the egg with that of the semen. Suppose you missed the cow when at your first estrus detection, or she showed heat right after you finished your heat detection. You come out, detect her here, breeding her 12 hours later. Again, good overlap between the fertile life of the sperm and that of the egg. So how does this relate to fixed-time AI? Well, these are some data based on the 14-day cedar prostaglandin protocol in heifers. And what this shows, it shows the profile of estrus expression following that particular protocol, at the end of that protocol, after the prostaglandin injection. And in order to determine the time of insemination for fixed time AI, you have to know this type of protocol, this type of profile. And notice that fixed time AI in this protocol is at 66 hours. This is roughly 12 hours or so after this peak in estrus activity. Well, based on what I just showed you about how estrus expression is really important for increasing pregnancy rate, you might say, well, why not delay this and give more cows time to show estrus? The problem with that is some of these cows that show estrus on the early side, you'll be breeding them too late. And that's shown here. Suppose you went out and you gave your injection of GnRH and AI and at the time you're inseminating, and you're doing it at about the time that those early estrus cows are ovulating, or maybe they'd ovulated several hours beforehand. Now what happens is, even though the egg is alive, the sperm are present but can't fertilize because they have to gain that capacity. So that's going to bring your pregnancy rate down. On the other hand, you could say, okay, well, let's shift it earlier just to make sure that we're able to get the semen into these cows early enough. The problem there is, if you go too early, so you're inducing ovulation 28 to 30 hours later in a majority of the cows. But yet if the sperm lifespan is 24 hours, it's going downhill by the time ovulation occurs. So my point is that with fixed-time AI, time of insemination is a compromise. You compromise between trying to get the maximum number of animals to have shown heat, but yet not waiting too long to where those early estrus cows are being inseminated too late. My point is, pay close attention to the recommended time of insemination. Try to stick with that. Well, my last point was, I was asked to share some things we've learned about the factors that affect pregnancy rate. And I just wanted to show you some things we've learned. This is from my own research program in conjunction with Tom Geary at Miles City, Montana, in which we've been studying the factors that affect the establishment of pregnancy in cattle, and in particular, some of the components of a synchronization program that affect pregnancy rate. So let's just start here with ovulation to the first GnRH. This is the injection, the purpose of which is to synchronize a Flichter wave. And what you're going to see is a group of arrows. This is what's called a path analysis. It tells you which factor affects another factor and whether it's positive or negative. This is based on about 1,100 cows. So what we find is if a cow responds to that first GnRH injection to synchronize a wave, now what that means is the follicle present at the time of insemination is going to be larger. So this is having a positive effect on follicle size at insemination. We know that A larger follicle at insemination can result in a larger corpus luteum, but a corpus luteum that makes more progesterone. So at 7 days after insemination, you have a higher level of progesterone being produced. Why is that important? Higher levels of progesterone had a very positive effect on pregnancy. So getting these cows to ovulate to this first generation ejection is very important because of its positive effect on follicle size, which then affects the amount of progesterone made and its effect on pregnancy. But synchronizing this wave, that is, ovulating to the first GnRH, also increases another hormone, estradiol. This is the hormone that brings a cow into heat and does a lot of other things that are important for the establishment of pregnancy. So cows that ovulate to the first GnRH have higher estradiol at insemination. Why is that important? Well, first of all, I should also mention that estradiol and follicle size are related. That the higher estradiol at insemination helps increase the amount of progesterone 7 days later. We talked about why that was important. But the higher estradiol at insemination also, independent of progesterone, also helps increase pregnancy rate. Finally, if a cow ovulates the first GnRH, she forms some luteal tissue in that ovary. That increases the amount of progesterone at prostaglandin. And cows that have higher progesterone at prostaglandin have higher progesterone after AI. So to make a long story short, the two things we've learned is the two most important factors that are affecting pregnancy rate in a situation like this is having high estradiol at insemination. That goes along with why you want a lot of those cows to have shown heat by the time of fixed time AI. And then also high progesterone after it. So what I've tried to do this morning is help you understand that estrus detection rate and conception rate, those are the two most important factors that affect pregnancy rate. It's kind of like when your car doesn't start. It's either not getting a spark or it's not getting gas. And based on which of those is, you can start to work backwards. So if you have a low pregnancy rate, you ought to start with these two factors and start to work backwards to see if you can figure out what happened. A successful AI program requires careful preparation and attention to detail. I know we all know that, but it's worth mentioning. Understanding the principles of synchronization are going to allow you to make an appropriate choice of a synchronization protocol and also facilitate your ability to troubleshoot. So I'd encourage you to sort of understand some of these basic principles that underlie this. And a kind of a companion talk to what I'm saying will be Dr. Inskeep's tomorrow, where he's going to talk to you about the factors that affect pregnancy loss. I've talked about the establishment of pregnancy. He's going to talk about pregnancy loss, and he'll give you some ideas on what's going on there. There are numerous variables that affect the establishment of pregnancy, and we still have a lot to learn on that. But one thing we know is that estrus expression is really important for the establishment of pregnancy, and that the two most important variables related to pregnancy success are high estradiol at the time of AI and increased progesterone after AI. So with that, I will just thank my colleagues who've helped me with this presentation and turn it over to Willie, and I'll be glad to visit with any of you about this during lunch.